gonna pull the plug?
Better change cameo.
Okay, well, I have a reputation for talking quickly. I can talk about the Polytron, which has been a long time in development, but it's very soon. So I'm glad that Mark said it was hot. But what we decided to do is use a user alpha that would maximize our chance of actually providing protection. And so with the zone event, we'll keep it around and all the time. This is an old model, so it looks like it's not. And so the polar must be the closest region of alpha here, where we might protection. We will have sensitivity to resolve features about the and demonstration of technology and concepts for future experiments. And probably the most important concept that will be demonstrated by polarization experiments in the near term is whether doing this from the ground is a good idea. And of course, there's a lot of us hope that polarization will turn out to be very amenable to ground-based observation, because in general, the scan strategies look at two orthogonal linear polarizations of the same scene, thereby looking through the same column of atmosphere, and if the atmosphere is unpolarized, that might help one could do a lot better from the ground than its conventional way of self-CO2 measurements. And that has very important implications for what we could do in the future. So the specifications of the polytron, the receiver sits on the 5.5 meter telescope at the other side of the radio observatory, which is the telescope that was used by Meyer to do the measurements, which has been altered to give a very low spillover of these beautiful secondary sea legs, a very low spillover. And the Polytron team spent some time in the summer of 1999 improving the surface accuracy to allow it to operate at the Polytron frequency, which is about 96 meters in our band, the set. In terms of the scan strategy, it's going to be a lot like SUSE. As you know, the SUSE drift scan for the part of the telescope will be allowed to find the 15. The Polytron's going to do something very similar. We're going to have 1-2 drift scan. And our sky coverage, we expect to be able to observe about 1.6 squares of reach in season. So that's the season being about 6 months, we think, of each year. And sensitivity should be 8 microns Kelvin in Q and U. Now, we haven't really altered the scan strategy much in our minds in recent years, so that's something that's very interesting to see Mark's calculations there. So here's the measurement concept, and now you can actually see those of you who've seen the polar we have a single due polarization corrugated entrance feed, we have an orthomotor transducer that splits the radiation into the short polar linear polarized state, and then we detect each one of the people who are also at the other end. Different polarimeters to obtain U, and by rotating the plane of polarization with respect to the feed, we can then measure U as well. So we pick the frequency. This is one of Max's figures. We only have one frequency, so what we're hoping is that, well, if nothing else, we'll learn something about torque. But we're hoping we're going to learn about more than that, because whether you're very pessimistic or very optimistic, near the foreground minimum. This is another nice picture that shows you, here's a schematic of the polytron. Most of the parts exist now. But we're actually going to rotate, the reason for showing this is we're going to rotate the plane of polarization to get confused by using a torque halfway device. It's a four inchadic chunk of this line port, and we'll spin it at some frequency, and then our polarization and this has some advantages. If for some reason we do find that we have atmospheric signal in our data, then we're taking
website that actually allows us to move the signal frequency to reduce the amount of atmospheric noise. Now, one of the problems Bill Holthouse has talked about this is that traditional bolometer systems use little helium cryostatics to pump their own top. The easiest way to make a bolometer is to pump a top, which is and then just a single stage bridge to get 50 milliseconds or 100 milliseconds, and this is the way Susie operates. Akbar and Bolotan and then the dump pump with multi-stage bridges to attain sub-Kelvin temperature, but you still have the problem that you have to top up the liquid helium. And the situation is exacerbated for the polar shop because we have very limited access. The telescope is very tall and you have to slightly deeper up that, but it would be totally impractical to try to top up helium even every few days. Totally impractical. And we want to run this for 6 months or a few years, so a liquid helium cryostat is very impractical. So the solution we've opted for is a 4,000 mechanical cryocooler with the same three-stage helium bridge that Akbar and Bolotan use. In fact, they're all made by the same systems with the same design. So let me show this again, and you can see what I'm talking about here. So this is the cryocooler down here, and there's a four top of the tip that's next to the plate, and then it's four tons, and so on the plate to ensure in this design. And this has turned out to be a complicated Well, there we go. The web can hear the last few minutes. So, if anyone's even listening still. this is a fairly complicated undertaking, not something that's been successfully attempted with bolometers yet. It is the similar to the technology that the Planck high-frequency instrument will use, in that that has a 4 Kelvin cooler of a quite different design to cooler bolometers. So we figured that we would also learn a lot about bolometers with cryocoolers. This is actually a picture of this is not the whole Polartron. This is the cryocooler, and it's just got a radiation shield over the top without any instrumentation in it, just to test how the cryocooler works. It's a three-stage cooler. It's got two Gifford McMahon stages and one Joule Thomson stage, and it has a cooling power of about a watt at 4.2 Kelvin, which is just the right amount to cycle the fridge. And so it's been an interesting engineering exercise to get this to work, because it's right at the edge for what you need for coolers. The absorption fridge, I don't think anyone has said much about this, but I just thought those of you who, some people might be interested, it's a three-stage, a helium four-stage that's used to create sufficient cooling power to cycle one helium three fridge, but that helium three fridge won't be cold enough for high sensitivity, so then we cycle another helium three fridge off the second fridge. So it's a fairly complicated beast, and it has a fairly long cycling time. Microphonics from coolers. We don't have too much test data on this yet, because we've spent most of our time getting our fridge working with the cryocooler. But the solutions we've gone for and that we hope are going to work are rigid wiring. We have a compressed air vibration isolation system, which is indicated here by the bellows, so that the cooler, the actual vibrating part of the cooler, is not connected rigidly to the 4 Kelvin stage. We also have some freedom because the readout electronics are similar to the SUSY readout electronics. We have AC bias bolometers. We also have the rotating wave plate. So we have quite a bit of freedom in our system to choose our signal frequency to avoid any strong microphonic lines. So this is the theory, and it's undergoing tests right now. I won't say much about this. It's very standard. It's being published in a lot of places. This is SUSY readout system. So in SUSY, we have two bolometers looking at different points on the sky. In the Polartron, these are the two bolometers looking at the orthogonal linear polarizations. Quartz half waveplate. This is the only polarization experiment, only CMB polarization experiment that's using one of these. So I just thought I'd say a little bit more about it. This is actually atmospheric noise measured with SUSY. So I just put it up there to show. This is atmospheric 1 over F noise from Hawaii. And so what we plan to... Now, SUSY when a cluster drifts through the CD beam, the signal frequency is kind of here, okay? So our detector noise in the absence of any atmosphere would sort of come in here at about 2.1 millimeters, but atmospheric noise pulls this right up and our signal frequency is here. So in SUSY, we always have some atmospheric noise, and then we use a bunch of different frequencies to remove that. Now, in the Polytron, we've only got one frequency. So what we're going to do is we're going to modulate the signal at 0.6 hertz by rotating the wave plate at 0.15 hertz, and so 0.6 hertz is down here somewhere. So we have the freedom to move around and hopefully get out of the atmospheric one over Earth noise, even if there is any. Of course, with the polarization strategy, because we're looking through the same column of atmosphere, these should be lower in any case. So, but we have a lot of differencing in to reduce these kinds of things. Another thing that I think is important about the Polytron compared to other possible scan strategies is that what we're going to do is we're going to drift scan, and then we're going to reacquire the source, and we're going to drift scan again. And so we will have this situation where objects that we are observing will rotate on the sky. And so we have the chance to maybe take out instrumental polarization by observing the strip at different parallactic angles. So here's our sensitivity prediction. We know that at the Owens Valley, we know that we have a lot more water vapor than, say, we would have from Hawaii. So we've assumed about 6 millimeters, which is, I think, pretty good winter weather. And we know what the detector noise is going to be. We can estimate the atmospheric 1 over F noise. And I did that by taking SUSY measurements of atmospheric noise in Hawaii, scaling it according to the water vapor, and then modeling the differencing scheme compared to the SUSY differencing scheme. And so we should find that the atmospheric noise is less than the detector noise. And so our expected sensitivity is about half a millikelvin root second. And this is actually what we might hope to achieve. This is actually in 4 years, so 4 seasons. So in a single season, we should be able to get a detection of polarization, and then we spend subsequent years actually mapping out the power spectrum. So it's frustrating. All I can tell you is the design still. We're still getting things underway. We finished making all the parts. Optical tests in a liquid helium viewer underway at Stanford. Dot noise tests with the cryocooler to make sure that our vibration minimization scheme works are underway at Caltech, and we're hoping to get first light in September. And I'll just show you very quickly. This is what Brian did a couple of weeks ago. Here's a signal. Here's the wave. This is the signal at the wave plate frequency, and this is at two different load temperatures, 300 Kelvin and 77 Kelvin. So you can see that we're actually detecting polarization photons. And you should not read anything into this temperature scale on the right, because this is a very basic readout scheme that does not have good noise characteristics. But anyway, at least we're finally seeing some photons. So now, actually, if I just have a quick couple of minutes, and if I can get my computer working, I just wanted to show you very quickly. This is the first time I've ever given a PowerPoint presentation, so it may go horribly wrong. On the screen. What I'm going to do is I'm going to talk to you about future experiments, and I'm going to describe an experiment that we're hoping to build at Stanford in collaboration with, no signal. That's maybe all I'm going to get. Yes, I could take some Polytron questions. It's warm. Now, making it cold would be an obvious upgrade. It's actually anti-reflection coated to reduce reflection. I'm not sure offhand enough. Scuba, for instance, uses its wave plate at a bunch of different frequencies. I probably have to restart my computer. That's what I'm guessing. Okay, well, this may not happen at all. Oh, hooray. Okay, what's the future? In the future, so what can we do with existing technology? We heard from Mark about new bolometer technology, which is great, and we will love to use that when it comes along. But what could you do with existing technology? You heard about Bolocam. Bolocam uses these 150 pixel NTD germanium spiderweb bolometer arrays. And so what could you do if you built a polarization experiment using these existing arrays. And this is what we're planning to do. This is a temporary name because I just found out that our UK collaborators don't like this name, so it probably won't end up being called this. But their name's even worse than ours, so there's going to be some arguing about it. So you probably won't hear quartz referred to too many times, which is a shame because Brian invented that name. It's a good name. So the aim is, we think, that we can duplicate the Planck polarization sensitivity years before the Planck launch, because one of the things about Planck is that we are limited with the number of pixels we have in the focal plane, and in particular, not many of them are polarized. And with this kind of technology, we can instrument this with many, many polarized pixels. So we're going to have a dedicated telescope aperture size to be determined, probably depending on how much money we can accumulate for this project. And the plan is to instrument the arrays with 40 feed horns, have two arrays, each of which is sensitive to an orthogonal linear polarization, and then observe for 6 months at each of four frequencies matched to the bands from Mauna Kea. And I've done some sensitivity calculations, and before you all jump on me and tell me what a terrible site Mauna Kea is and how we should go to the South Pole, what I did was I took a year's worth of atmospheric data from Mauna Kea for several different years and kind of averaged the sensitivity, assuming a certain number of days at each type of water vapor setting. And then I, to compare with other experiments, I just quickly calculated this figure of merit, which you're probably all familiar with. And so we could try to, we can do something, we hope, that is comparable to Planck. I apologize to the Boomerang people in the audience. I was assuming the same technology on Boomerang. I have no idea whether that's right or not, so again, don't go upon me for that. But I think that's probably representative. The great advantage we would have over Boomerang would be length of observing time, if it turns out that atmospheric noise is not a problem, and we should know that thing from Polartron. In 2 years of observing, what we're going to do, we're going to adopt a scan strategy with this instrument that would be matched to measuring B-modes. So it's kind of interesting because what we'll do is we'll restrict our sky coverage, and this is a measurement of EMOs, and this is a measurement of BMOs, and the red line is us, and the blue line is Planck, and so you can see that Planck is would be more sensitive to EMOs than we would be, and that's because Planck is doing the whole sky, and we're just doing a restricted part of the sky, so we run into sample variance pretty quickly, but we could probably do a measurement that was comparable to Planck of the BMOs. I think that's all my slides. So I just threw that together about 5 minutes ago because this is really starting to come together now, and so we're pretty excited about it. So, okay. Mauna Kea. Sorry? TBD. we're talking to the, well, this is a UK-US collaboration, and the UK is probably going to build the telescope, and they're in discussion with the Joint Astronomy Centre. So.
Would an ADR be simpler behind that 4K cooler?
I don't know much about ADRs because I've never used one, but I think, yeah.
What? You need a dual stage one.
You still need dual stage. There is no sub-Kelvin cooler.
Instead of three, so it's not a huge advantage.
Yeah.
First, you get colder.
Yeah. The thing is, with the kind of loading you anticipate from the ground, there's no real advantage to us being any colder. So.
Yeah, I'm just looking at six stages of cooling.
Well, you would only actually. I think if you used an ADR, you'd only have one stage less. So I don't think it's a huge advantage. No, it's an unfortunate fact that there are no single stage sub-Kelvin coolers that work off 4 Kelvin. Okay, is that it? Good. Oh, I got a stack on schedule as well. That got the most applause of the day. Yeah.